Hello, this is Mark Cummings, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Series 5, Episode 6 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, and I'm very happy to be joined for this podcast by our new Chief Executive Officer of Gloucester Rugby Club, Alex Brown.
Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you very much for joining me, Alex. It's been a long time coming. I know I badgered you at, I think, a fans forum about 6 months ago, and you very kindly agreed to join me. So thank you very much. First of all, a great start to the season. We've won 2 out of 2, a great win away to Saracens in the Premiership Cup this weekend. Hopefully that's a very happy club at the moment.
It is, certainly is, and thanks for having me on, Ed. Certainly, winning feels good, doesn't it? It feels nice, and you know, it's great to have rugby back on. It seems like an eternity we've been on pre-season camps and training and getting that right for the start of the season, and good to have it back on amidst all the World Cup that's going on. So my weekends are pretty jammed with watching rugby one way or another, whether it's live or on the television or whatever. But a whole heap of rugby to be enjoyed. And, you know, you're right. 2 wins from 2 is a great start, albeit in kind of a different start to the tournament. We don't normally start this way with the Premiership Cup as it is 5 games on the bounce and then into Premiership, but quite an interesting start. It gets us to see everyone, you know, everyone will get a shot over the course of this 5 weeks. We get to see the squad and see some talent coming through. We've already seen some of that over the course of the last 2 games. So yeah, and you know, delighted to get a away win at Saracens. That was a cracking second half performance. I think the first half was reasonable and the boys did well. Second half, they really put it together and delighted with it.
Yeah, I mean, really good. Obviously, unfortunately, due to the nature of things like this, that there's limited coverage of the competition. Understandably, with the World Cup on, it's probably difficult to find a market for it. But is that a slight frustration that there's not more televised games on this in terms of the Premiership Cup? Do you think there's an opportunity missed there?
Well, possibly, but I do like getting people to the stadiums. Like, fill the stadiums. The games are all timed around the sort of internationals. So come down and watch, because actually the experience is no better live, is it? You know, you've got to come watch it. So we had sort of 5,000-6,000 here for our match at the opener, and hopefully we'll just build on that as we go through. Quinn's on Friday night. Friday night's always good fun here. So looking forward to it all.
Yeah, the advantage is that obviously the Friday night, there's no England game, so the England game being the Saturday. You mentioned the World Cup. Are you enjoying it so far?
I am. I love the World Cup because it's such a spectacle, isn't it? Even from the opening ceremony, that whole piece was just it just sends tingles of your body, doesn't it? Because you've got such a grand stage. And I think France are doing a cracking job in hosting it, despite the sort of disruptions that were with some of the supporters in Marseille. But it looks like they're doing a great job. The World Cup's great, but also what's going on here is great. You know, it's rugby's back at Kingzone, which is always the enjoyment.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What we'll do is we'll come back to King's Home and this season in a bit. I wanted to start, though, talking about yourself, Alex, because obviously, I mean, I'm sure every Gloucester fan knows that you are a former player, and you're not only a former player, you're a person who's got significant achievements behind him. And I just really wanted to start with your earliest rugby memories. When do you kind of remember picking up rugby or seeing rugby for the first time?
Oh, it's winding back the years now, Ed. a long time ago. I think rugby's been part of my life for a long, long time. My dad was a rugby player himself, captained Clifton, played a bit for Bristol. And very early on, I was part of a junior rugby team, Clifton Rugby Club, at age 5, playing for the under-8s, because I was a little bit bigger than most five-year-olds were back then. And so size has definitely benefited me. But I've held some very fond memories of my time at Clifton Rugby Club and those sort of formative years of rugby. And then it was school, really, after that. School was where it all kind of just developed. Rugby was clearly part of my life when I was young and played it and enjoyed it, but really took it seriously at school level. And I think it's fair to say that a few people steered that for me. Andy Robinson at the time was our coach at school. Andy Robinson, the flanker, England flanker, and Bath flanker, and he was our coach at school, and this was just before professional rugby came into play. And then in the latter years, went away and had a successful career with Bath, but started me on that journey. And then a really inspirational guy, a guy called Alan Martinovich, who really took the bull by the horns and drove school rugby to another level. We at Colston's school in Bristol, we were kind of undisputed champions of the sort of under-18s league for many, many years. And it was him who really pushed me forward anyway, recognising that I could play and gave me the opportunity and kind of grew from there, really.
Yeah, and kind of leads me on to the next question, which is, was it at that point, did you think, actually, I could make a career out of this? I could be a professional rugby player? Because obviously, I've spoken to a few of the guys who were around the amateur era, and it wasn't an immediate and obvious decision. You guys are playing for fun and you had other jobs, and then suddenly it becomes an opportunity to actually earn money doing it. From your point of view, from my limited knowledge and research here, I think you played your entire career within the professional game. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I was one of the lucky ones, really, because I kind of bridged the gap between the amateur age of rugby, and then it went professional. It had just gone professional when I started, and I got an offer, a contract to play when I was still at school. So school rugby kind of propelled things, and as I said, I spoke about the success that Colston's school had, and produced lots of really talented players, and gave me the opportunity to play. And why would you not do it? It was just such a great time. Rugby was taking off, and we didn't really know which direction it was going to go in. There was no academy set up. There was, big squads with a huge amount of numbers of players and a lot of money being thrown around about, right, get this coach, get that coach, this is what we need, kind of trying to follow the football model without really having a structure and organization in place, and really a way of commercializing it. So that it was all kind of just do this and crack on and no real thought. But it was a great time at the same time. We had some brilliant experiences, and to be offered a professional contract when I was 18 was just a joy. And to do that, and I was doing it alongside kind of a business degree that I actually ended up stopping because I wanted to commit fully to rugby. And it kind of grew from there.
Funny enough, I'll sort of come back to this in a bit more detail later, but those experiences early on, from your point of view, you mentioned sort of the lack of structure, the lack of sort of maybe forward planning from rugby at its early stages. Do you think that's had an impact on how you do your job now, in that you've seen kind of the Wild West side of things and how it started? Does that inform how you sort of make decisions and think about the way you would run, Gloucester as a business and as a model now?
Yeah, oh, sure, absolutely. I think one of the benefits I've had is being through the whole journey from the very embryonic stages of rugby, professional rugby, through to where it is now. And it's a real sort of commercial beast. So you learn along the way, don't you? You just learn what's good and what's good practice and what doesn't work and what does work, and adapt accordingly. And I definitely learned from all those experiences. As a player, you learn what's good from a team perspective and what works and what coaches work, and experiences of different levels, whether it's strength and conditioners or medics or whatever, learn the right balance there that works well. And then commercially the same, you learn what actually doesn't work and what's important as well. And every club's got its own little nuance, for sure. Gloucester, well, it's just a wonderful club. I'm just can't speak highly enough, but I love it. It's a massive part of my life and has been for over 20 years. So I kind of understand what needs to be done here. And get what's important for people, and that's the sort of the key thing that really interests me is making this club something that people can be proud of. That's what we want to get to.
And then going back to your professional playing days, my next sort of question was around your experiences. So really simple, I suppose, the best player you played with, or best players you played with, the best players you played against. Any sort of standout names or people you would immediately come to head?
Well, actually, it's funny you say that. It's a lot of people are asking me this question at the moment because we've just, as you've probably seen, launched our Hall of Fame for our 150th year celebrations. And there are some names on there that, you know, all the majority of the people on there in the Hall of Fame I've played with. And some are obviously geniuses, and you've always got your opinion about who's good and not. But I've been fortunate enough over the years to play with some real superstars, you know, like Johnny Wilkinson and our World Cup winners that we have at the club, Trev and Gummers and obviously Vix. But I suppose if you're picking one of them out, one that sort of stands out really was Jameson St. Daniel. And for all the reasons that everyone will know, but I suppose probably from my perspective, he's just one of those players that when you have him on your team sheet, you just get an element of comfort. We've got Simba in the team. It's great. I mean, he's, as well as being a wonderfully balanced runner and, you know, creative thinker and obviously hugely talented, he's a particularly smart rugby player and ultra competitive. You know, that sort of elite level of competition is what we strive for in all the players, but with him you had it in abundance that probably people don't necessarily realize. I remember one specific training session. This is when Simbad was coming to sort of the latter parts of his career, although he obviously got his career stopped early because of injury. But it was a time when Johnny May was first on the scene, and Johnny was the new boy in town, and, you know, this quick winger, what is this guy, who is this Johnny May character? And, you know, in training sessions, he'd be carving up, you know, Johnny would be like, well, what have we got here? We've got this special player. And obviously Sinbad being Sinbad just didn't really, not necessarily, he loved it because he was obviously in the same team, but was ultra competitive and wanted to be still that person. And we'd often have scuffles between those two training sessions because it's just the competitive nature of it. And Sinbad wouldn't necessarily be like that with anyone else, but with Johnny, he was all over. And Johnny very much knew what he was dealing with when he was training with Sinbad. So
that's a brilliant insight, because I think the one person who I've never really ever seen get involved in the fisticuffs and all the nonsense you sometimes see is Sinbad. So it's interesting, this fact that he, you know,
he's got it in him for sure. Mm. And you know, the training sessions that we had, you'd obviously, it was kind of semi-contact. You put a shoulder on and get through. And, you know, with forwards, you kind of put a shoulder on. If someone hits you a little bit tired, well, you get a little bit like, well, I'm just going to put a bit more of a shoulder on. And it just escalates. But those sort of semi-contact sessions, I remember distinctly, it was definitely not semi-contact with Sinbad and John. It was full on.
To be fair, John, it doesn't really surprise me with Johnny May, because even now you can tell he's almost sort of prowling at times when you're watching him in a cherry and white shirt, or even England. You know, there's a slight air of mild annoyance that seems to just follow Johnny when he's on the pitch, which is lovely to watch.
Well, it's lovely to watch, and it's great to see him in an England shirt still. You know, I love it. I was watching the game last night, and just so proud that one of our lot are out there representing the country. It's cracking. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. Just as again onto your playing days, final really bit really. There's clearly you were part of a squad and a team that did amazing things at Gloucester, but never quite got there. And I'm assuming, I think I asked you in my little thing I sent across to you, which was, what's your biggest frustrations and regrets? And I'd imagine that probably chimes with most Gloucester supporters and what that might be. But anything else that we've missed off?
No, I think you summed it up. It's a frustration because I think this club deserves far more than it's achieved. And it's something that I'm really passionate now in this role of driving as hard as I can to get it achieved, because we need to win some things here. We're a big enough club to win things. And I know George Skivington is of the same mindset, that we've just got to go and win some stuff because it feels good. And it actually is what this club deserves. So, yes, clearly there's frustrations over the course of the time that I was a player. But some of the other bits that I get frustrated with is, you know, my time as a player, I was obviously injured and my career stopped by injury, so that was frustrating. I see some of the players now who bring their kids to watch games, and I would have loved to have done that. You know, I would have loved to have brought my kids here and watched me play, and it was only my son who came to watch a few games, but he was way too young to recognize the importance, because those moments are special and you cherish them, don't you? Your family is so important. It was a shame not to have shared those wonderful days, because there have been some cracking days here at Kingsholm that we've all enjoyed. And even going to finals, that whole experience, it's just memorable and something that, you know, I can be very proud of, that I've still got those experiences in my mind, etched in my mind. And it's just a shame that I couldn't share it with my close family, or the rest of my family were there.
I mean, the other thing as well, just as an aside, I think, is it 4 caps for England? Apologies if I got that wrong.
You've over-egged me. I was actually 3.
Is it 3? Okay. I thought it was 4. Yeah. But not many.
I suppose, you know, look back, could I've got more? I think I enjoyed the time that I had my caps. Clearly, they were big moments of my career, and, you know, stuck out for sure. They clearly were significant moments. And I remember as a child going to Twickenham and watching games and looking and feeling in awe of the England players lining up to sing the anthems and thinking, God, that must be amazing. You know, in front of 85,000 people, 82, whatever it is, it's just such a proud moment. And I just kind of take it for granted that that's been and gone and happened. And I did that. It's an amazing thing. Very, very proud of that achievement for sure.
Do you think, I mean, I know it's a difficult question, but do you think you should have had more caps? I mean, I think if you ask most Gloucester supporters, you had a ridiculous run of games where you were injury free. And I think then, unfortunately, you then got an injury at a time where you were being picked for England, which.
Yeah, it was actually really annoying, my injuries, because they came up at just the wrong time. It's just never get injured at a good time, I guess. But for me, certainly internationally, I just seem to pick up knocks. When I remember there was one Six Nations series that I was training in with Simon Shaw, and it was me and him, and we were due to start, and then I got a neck injury, and that ruled me out for the whole series. And, you know, those moments are, you kind of miss that. And then there was a summer tour, and it wasn't really a summer tour because British Lions are playing, and it was kind of a second string England team that, you know, I obviously love those, and playing for your country is special for sure, but missed out on sort of making my mark at England level at the start, I suppose. And then you're chasing your heels really about getting back in. It's kind of, I suppose, my period, my time when I was playing second row was a very, very highly congested position with some really, really top players playing in there. So no sort of issue with selection, because I thought all the players were really good. But, you know, that moment of injury And I suppose Sinbad was the same.
Yeah, Sinbad was.
I mean, he probably more so than me deserved far more caps. I think he ended up with only 10 or so, not very many. Probably could have easily been 100.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking about this. Funny enough, about the Hall of Fame names and things like that. And it was interesting because we did a two pods on it, and we did mention Sinbad, and it's an ongoing sort of sore that he didn't get as many caps as he should have done. I think combination of he was around a time when there was a lot of very good players as well. But yeah, injuries seemed to particularly be the killer for him because they always came at the most inopportune time. So, and then just sort of moving on, obviously you mentioned it, you unfortunately had to end your career early through injury. What were your immediate plans? I suppose it's a huge shock. I mean, you've obviously had the business degree that you mentioned earlier that was sort of parked. Was that always your initial thought? Okay, whenever I finish rugby, I'm going to go back to the business side of things, or were there other opportunities that presented themselves to you?
It's a good question because I don't think and certainly something that I drive home hard with the players now is I think preparing for outside of rugby is really quite important because rugby does stop and it does have a timeline. There's always an end point, and sometimes that end point can be forced upon you a bit earlier. So being prepared for that end point is actually quite important. I was probably fortunate enough that rugby, when I started, wasn't as professional as it is now. It wasn't as demanding in your time and certainly your physical nature, because the training now is really, really refined and defined, as it should be. But back when I was playing it, you probably had a bit more time, and I certainly had more time to focus on other things. And I did at the time. I was kind of into some property renovations and some other outside of off-field rugby sort of business, which was good fun, and I enjoyed that. But when I was playing, I was obsessed, a little bit sadly obsessed by trying to better the team performance, and particular in my department, which was the line-out, and spent so much time analysing and reviewing and looking, and it was all centred around detail and getting that detail absolutely spot on. And it's something that I've carried on through, is like your attention to detail and your precision around that is true in everything you do, actually, not just lineouts. You know, you have to be on point and you're under pressure and you have to deliver, but it's the same when it comes to any decision you make. You know, you've got to be detailed, you've got to resource it, analyze it, got feedback on all the rest of it. So I going back to your question, was I prepared for a life in rugby? I think I probably was thinking, do you know what, there may be something to do with line-out coaching, because I started off by doing a little bit of that. When I got injured, I was probably fortunate in many ways that the club was going through a little bit of change in terms of head coach, director of rugby. Nigel Davis had just been appointed as our director of rugby, and he came in, and the first thing he said is, I don't have a team manager, I need to recruit a team manager. And my first game with the club for the club that year was against Northampton on the 1st of September, and that's when I got injured. And he was like, well, do you want to just do this team manager role whilst you're trying to find your feet? And I was like, okay, well, yeah, I'll do that. I'll do a little bit of line-out coaching as well. So I did a little bit of both, because I wanted to keep my foot in the camp and on a coaching perspective. But it was pretty clear that my sort of attention to detail and all that fitted really nicely with the team manager role. You've got to be really organized, administratively strong, and all the bits that I actually enjoy and thrive on. And it was in a sport that I love, and clearly a club that I'm very passionate about. So that whole transition from player to team manager work really nicely. And you know, I was hugely grateful for Nigel at the time, and Ryan Walkinshaw at the time to support me in that role and pull me through. And, you know, I hold that very close to me because I think, you know, the clubs looked after me there. And so, you know, I definitely feel that sense of pride that the club's been really good and done the right thing. And I absolutely try and do that. And everything I do is going forward is you've got to be proud of what you do and make sure the club makes the right decisions. So that's Nigel. Nigel was a wonderful director of rugby in many ways. It was kind of a little bit hit and miss with some of the performances we had, but in terms of a man manager, I think he was particularly strong. Some of his sort of skills are about teaching people to go and do and empowering them. Is held me strong for sure. You know, I'd take that bit of advice and use it now because I think empowering people is absolutely where you get the best out of them.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I mean, I suppose we hear so often that the transition from end of playing, you know, into your post rugby career is quite a difficult one. So in this case, it sounds like the club, fortunately for you, it helped that transition. It became less of an issue for you. Just on that, was it quite difficult though for him? Obviously you're still part of the team and at the time and you were still part of the setup. Was it quite difficult to then not be able to just step on the field and get involved? Was there that little bit, that really strong tug to say, oh, do you know what, the injury's not that bad, I can get on, I can go back?
There was, and actually you're right, because that's probably why I kept the sort of line out bit associated with the role. It was an odd role as team manager stroke line out sort of coordinator, which I enjoyed, but I soon realized that actually I needed to empower, and learning from Nigel, go and empower other people to do that, because I can't be there always. And you know, letting the team crack on and go and figure their own way of doing things, it may not be my way, but it's their own way, and find their own path was the way to do it. And that was actually quite hard, because it's you're kind of giving up what you've spent so much time and energy and you're right, the player bit, you know, it still sits with you now. I can go out and do that. And you look at the team and you go, I can do that. I could do that better than you could. Certainly now, some of the contact levels and the physicality, it's just gone up a huge amount over the course of the last 10 years or so. It's really, really developed, and the game is far more powerful and explosive now. So certainly some of that I couldn't do, but other bits you look at and go, come on, surely you can make that pass, but it's never quite as it seems on the sideline.
As we found out the other day when two of us decided to take part in a charity match. We all talk the big game, but honestly, I think I dropped about 6 passes, and they weren't that hard. Honestly, it's quite painful to realise your limitations.
It's reality sets in, and
it does.
Actually, it looks easy, doesn't it? But it's not.
It's really not. No, I still blame the inside centre. You know, one of our mates, he's a very good rugby player, but I think I caught one. I think I only caught one sort of near my bread basket. The rest of them were either too low or too high. That's the excuse I'm going with anyway. So kind of moving on to the where you are now, really. You've obviously taken over the transitioned into the CEO role over the summer. I would say unexpectedly. I'm going to say that maybe slightly cheekily, but has that been an easy transition? Because obviously you've been, you were an operations director, I suppose. Is that a bit difficult to, in terms of non-rugby speak, it's very difficult to do a direct translation. But has that transition into CEO been quite an easy one for you?
Well, it's been really enjoyable. That's one thing for sure. You know, I've been overwhelmed by the amount of positivity and well wishes and all the rest of it from everyone, from supporters, box holders, players, ex-players. It's been overwhelming, really, which has been really great and encouraging. I think my former role as COO. So my former role was sat over both playing department and commercial.
Yeah.
That's set me really well for this role. So the transition has been relatively simple. There's been a few little bits and pieces that clearly, when you leave a post, there's a void and you need to fill that void. And so we've been working through that, but that's all in hand and in good shape. So now I think overall it's been, like I said, it's been really, really enjoyable. And I'm just super excited about it. I say it's season proper because season has started.
I know.
when we get into the Premiership, and this season is like no other. I mean, even when I was playing, I don't think we had such amount of back-to-back games up until the end of January. It's Premiership, 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 Europe, Premiership, Premiership. And it does not stop. It's relentless until the end of January. So the way that teams manage their squads and get through the sticky patches, and you know, certainly for us, we've done a huge amount of work on how do we start so well last year and finish so poorly in many ways, because we did, and let's be honest about it, we didn't finish anywhere near as well as we could, and was that to do with the way we selected the team and the balance of the squad over the course of the season, and even the training? Can we adjust? And this is where I love the detail, because it's analyzing, it's really digging into the specifics about what did we do well and what did we do badly, and what's going to make us a winning team. And clearly we've added a few more bodies to the team with Max and Zach, and they're great additions, and delighted with those, as well are a whole heap of really talented youngsters who we're fortunate enough to pick off from London Irish and Wasps and Worcester. So some nice additions, but it's going to be a relentless season one way or another. The World Cup is really challenging for all teams, and us, we're the same as others. We've got eight guys out there at the moment, so getting them back in good shape will be paramount. And you know, we want them to do as well as they can, so we want to push them to push on. You know, we've got probably our most amount of players with Argentina, so it was a bit of a funny one watching that game. You know, seeing the Argentinians go well is great for us, because you know that some of our lads are playing there. But I'm an Englishman. I want England to do well, really.
Yeah, there was a little bit of me on the England Argentina game when I saw Santi get Simbin. There was a little bit of me going, well, that's not good, because we want Santi to do well. But at the same time, that's good, because he's off the field at least for 10 minutes. I know what you mean. So sort of moving on to the whole year, and you mentioned obviously it's a very weird year in that we've got back-to-back top flight rugby from, well, middle of October all the way through to the end of January. And I think you're right, it is a bit of a phony war with the Premiership Cup, but we'll hopefully there's, with the way that it started, there's definitely an opportunity, I think, for something exciting there. How the planning of the 150th anniversary year, which is another element to this year, which is, again, very different, has any of that changed with you coming into your new role, or were those plans basically set in stone and you're just carrying those on?
Not changed. No, I mean, this is a year, was always going to be a very special year for the club. 150 years is a milestone, isn't it? So we need to make sure we recognise that and do it justice. There's a lot of people who need to be recognised for being part of that. That sort of 150 years. And we've got various things going out throughout the season. As you'll know, we had our launch event here, which was a great success in the car park. It was actually cracking day. I think the weather held out for us nicely. And the Barbarians are coming up. It's actually it's the one team I firstly never played for. I would love to play for the Barbarians. I played against the Barbarians for England. Kind of the end of the season, you know, those games at Twickenham. But the Barbarians coming here is going to be a cracking day. We've got over 200 former players coming to that day.
Oh, wow.
which is in recognition of the 150 years, and we're going to have a really great event for them. So they'll be around, and I'm just looking forward to that as being the kind of the moment. So that's only in a couple of weeks time, which is going to be good stuff. And then we've got lots of other things sort of splattered over the course of the season, really. The one that's not in the diary for anyone just yet is we're planning on, and this is a little bit inside a scoop, we're hopefully going to do a nice what I'm really passionate about, get to the point, is that the community is such a big part of this club, and I really want to try and embrace that on all levels, and so we've linked in with the city, and I'm going to try and do a big event in the city centre, and really shout about our 150 years and our club, and actually give back a bit more, because this club is so key to everything that goes on within the community, and we need to embrace that, and we really need to do it justice. And so we're going to be focusing a lot more on our community work, whether that's the camps we offer, or the schools we go to, or the outreach programs we have. All of those pieces need to be reflective of the club's journey, and really for people to get behind it, but also for us to give back a bit, because we are important to the city. We know that, but it's also important for us to demonstrate that out in the community, and let's go and do that.
That sounds brilliant, and I think you're right. I mean, the one great thing about all sports clubs, I think, to some lesser or some greater extent, is they do have a massive impact in their local communities. I think Gloucester Rugby, particularly, because we aren't a hotbed of football in this particular part of the world, have a almost unique place in that for a city this size. And a community this size, that rugby plays such a central part, and it'll be fantastic to see, and look forward to seeing what those plans look like. So thank you very much for that. It was always good to get an exclusive on it, because we don't get many. Other than maybe some nefarious reasons that we've got some contacts who can tell us when the European fixtures are going to be. Now I've got a couple of questions that we've been asked to ask by supporters, and some people who follow the pod. The first bit is kind of relying, flows from one to the other. So the first thing is in relation to the salary cap. Now the salary cap clearly is an ongoing issue for the English game, particularly when we're comparing that with, other leagues, certainly the French League and maybe even the URC. Do you feel that the current salary cap level is the correct one? Do you think it needs to be maintained at that level, or do you think there needs to be a bit of flexibility with that?
It's an interesting question, because clearly there's been a lot of talk about the salary cap over the past 2 years, really, and this is brought about by COVID, when the salary cap went down, and that was the right decision for it to go down, absolutely right, because otherwise more clubs would have been in a whole lot of problems. And, you know, it's desperately sad to see three clubs leave the league, let alone any more. So that decision was absolutely right. And then for us to compete with other countries, the decision was made to raise it again. And that decision was put in place quite a while ago. And the reason for it being put in place a while ago and then not adjusted is that people then, well, clubs like us plan for that, and we recruit on the basis of that. And so our squad succession, you know, we're looking at squads at 3-4 years out, and understanding where that sits is important, because if we don't know what the cap level is in 2 years' time, how could we sign a player on a 3-year contract, because that clearly impacts that cap year in 2 years' time. So I understand the rationale for the level. What I think we need as a premiership is a far greater alignment with the cap versus central income. So central income is all the money that comes in via premiership, mainly your TV rights and some central sponsorship deals. If we have that alignment, that if that central income rises or goes down, then it's reflected in the cap, because that's the way we're going to have sustainability. if we don't have that ratio correct, then there's going to be a problem for some clubs. We're particularly lucky here. As I said to you, we have our own stadium for a start, but we've also got an amazing core fan base, which underpins the club, really. You know, without the loyal supporters, we wouldn't be here. You know, that's why I'm saying about the importance of our community. It's absolutely imperative.
Yeah.
But that's not the same for every club. You know, I know Sale are really struggling from that. They're building on good foundations now. But their season ticket numbers are way, way less than ours. So the central income piece is important. If we can get that ratio right, then I think there'll be a bright future for the club. I'm actually super excited about this season generally, just with the 10-team league. I think there's been a lot of negativity around it, around the three clubs going, and rightly so, because it's not right for the sport or all for those three clubs. But now we're here with 10 teams, it actually makes a lot of sense on many levels, because there's clear gaps, isn't there? So we've got this Premiership run. I know the World Cup's going on at the moment, so it's a little bit unfair to judge it on this season. But when we get up to Six Nations, there's no Premiership games, which is absolutely right, because they're all playing in the Six Nations. And it gives us everyone to focus on Six Nations tournament and watch that and enjoy that, and not get frustrated when you don't see Zam playing for us on the weekend. Well, because he's playing for Wales. So it's protecting the product. So the Premiership product is going to be a cracking one this season, and then for seasons to go on. So it's all quite exciting at the times going forward.
So on that, then sort of next bit of it, really, which was the promotion and relegation. Now, obviously, we've just had the first couple of rounds of the Premiership Cup, in which we've got Championship clubs in for the first time. There have been, brilliantly, some shocks. But I think we do have to put a bit of context in it, let's be honest, that the teams that the Premiership sides are putting out, because of the nature of the way the league's going to be working, are not, let's shall we say, they're not going to be full-strength sides. So there's been, I've seen it on Twitter a lot, which is not normally the best place to base your viewpoints on, but there's been a bit of a call, well, this is a perfect example, we should have promotion and relegation back. Are you someone who thinks that's going to end, the end game is going to, we're going to return to that promotion relegation setup? Or do you think we need to be a bit more nuanced about that?
I think that the promotion relegation is actually really quite exciting. I really enjoyed it when you have that relegation battle or that promotion battle and that fight, that sort of, it makes every game feel worthwhile, doesn't it? You know, you don't want to be at the bottom of the league because there is a threat. Now, at the moment, there isn't necessarily that threat, although, you know, you could argue that the Premiership last year, the games were so intense, and it was only up until the last game of the season, really, that you knew who was going to be at the bottom and who was going to be four or five places up, or even for us, we could have jumped two, three, four, five places by a couple of wins. It was that tight. So but what is for sure is that we need a bit of stability right now. That's absolutely imperative. The Premiership needs stability, so it can't take on the whole promotion relegation just yet. I think that maybe down the line in years to come, having promotion relegation is the right thing to do, given that there will be, hopefully will be, clubs who will be fighting for that promotion space, and that may be a resurgence of Wasps or London Irish. Who knows where that's going to end up? But let's let the Premiership settle and get this product going as well as we can before we start talking about promotion relegation. I think that everyone needs that certainty right now, and don't want anything disrupting any of the Premiership clubs.
Yeah, no, I wholeheartedly agree. I think I do understand the reason why people call for the promotion relegation to return, but I think, as you're right, we need to have a bit of settling. When you lose three teams in a season, you know, you need to take stock and understand the reasons why. So putting another club into financial straits by relegating them is not going to help anyone. So yeah, agreed. Now the sort of final bit in these questions, and there were quite a few of these, and it's very, very specific questions about ticket pricing and pricing generally. And I'm trying to wrap it up into one question for you rather than asking millions of questions about the same topic. So we all understand that the club have got to make money to succeed. The ticket pricing over the last couple of years, we have seen increases. And I think we all understand the pressures of COVID and things like that are obviously part parcel of that. And then also it's the additional benefits for the members. So like myself and Jim, who are part of the pod, you know, maybe a perception with losing additional three home games. Are there sort of open conversations within the club around looking at other benefits for members to maybe compensate for those games that have been lost, or the value in the ticket maybe being the perception of the ticket value being diminished? I hope that's as concise as I can make it.
it's an interesting question, and I do understand the whole price piece, particularly given the sort of state of the economy right now. But I suppose that kind of works in two ways. We're very, very aware that everything around us is going up. There's like, you go and get fuel from the petrol station, whatever it is, it's going up. Food shopping, it's all going up, isn't it? And we made a conscious decision last year, given that we kind of anticipated it being three clubs that were going to fall away. We obviously knew about two, but there was anticipation there was that was going to be a third, to not increase our prices in terms of club membership, because and that's contrary to the vast majority of the Premiership, by the way. Everyone else has increased, but we didn't do that because quite frankly, your point's right, there's less games here now, and everything for us has gone up because we're not unusual. All of our operating costs have gone up, and we've just kind of had to take that on board. But what was important is that there wasn't a price rise, as well as less games for the members that are so important, as I said at the start. The community, the fans, the people we have here on a week by week or bi-weekly basis is the core of the business. So let's make sure we get that right, and then servicing them with, firstly, the match day experience, making that the best thing ever. You know, you're coming to Kingsome and be blown away, and kind of that I didn't expect that moment. You know, you're coming to Kingsome and you're having those feelings. So we're doing plenty of work around the fan experience, and that's whether it's the bars or whether it's the fan zone or whether it's whatever it is, we're trying to enhance that as best we can. But equally, to your point about membership sort of benefits, additional benefits, we're actually in the stage of reviewing that at the moment, because I do think that doing above and beyond for a member, what is it that a membership buys you? Well, it's definitely the cheapest way to watch the rugby here, because that's the nature of a club membership, season ticket. But what else does it get? Does it get you some other things that you weren't expecting? So we're reviewing that at the moment, and that's high on the agenda as well, because I'm conscious that people do spend their money, they portion it up, and this is a big expense for people, and we have to make it compelling enough that it actually, there's no decision to be made. Of course I'm going to renew or join. It needs to be of that thought, and then we're all winning, and that's what we want. We want everyone to win here, and that's winning on all different levels, winning on the field and winning off the field as well.
Just as a quick aside on that one, I mean, I know that when I've had conversations with previous people who are either in your position or within the club, one of the slight frustrations, and I think it's a double-edged sword, we're often seen, and we are quite rightly looked at, as a traditional rugby club with a very traditional support base. Is that a frustration, the fact that, because that means then some innovations that you might want to bring in are more difficult because the supporter base is less likely to necessarily go, oh, that's a really good idea. You know, like, I mean, the daft one that everyone talks about is music after scores, for example. Small little things like that. Do you find that, is that a frustration, or is it something you can work around, or do you think it's just a case of messaging?
I think it's interesting you say that, because I think we do have a blend here. I think there are certainly with the way that the women's team have taken to the fore, and we saw a completely different audience, different demographic come and support our girls play here in the final and win the final than we do traditionally on a normal match day. So there is a blended demographic, and we've got to make sure that we do cater for everyone, and we do have the thought that actually that's really not going to work with this group. What we do here, what maybe Quinns do and what we do are very, very, very different. And we've just got to be cognizant of that. But also we've got to be ambitious and look at what else is there. And particularly for the junior supporters who do want something a little bit different. They do want an interactive fan zone. They do want to have some games on the pitch. They do want to be part of the community programs. Can we do something a little bit different for that group who are coming through, who ultimately are going to be our season ticket holders in 20 years' time, aren't they? That's how it works. I mean, I'm sure when your first experience of Kings, I'm sure you were probably a young child, and that's the way it goes. Once you're a season ticket holder here at a young age, you are a lifelong supporter. And I've known that because I when I played here, when I joined here, there are supporters that were there then and they're here now. And that was 20 years ago. And they're lifelong supporters. And that is why we've got this special club. It's a very, very special place. We've got these supporters who they're lifelong supporters, and that's great. And we've got to make sure that we deliver for all of them.
Final question, and thank you very much again, Alex, for your time. I really do appreciate it. You mentioned a few times about the sort of the way that we're trying to develop. You're trying to develop the club and make sure that it's an attractive proposition. And there's a lot of negativity generally about English rugby at the moment. Do you share some of that, or are you generally more positive about the future of English rugby? Obviously, we're looking like we're nearly in the quarterfinals of the World Cup as we speak. I mean, God forbid a shocking result against Chile at the weekend. Do you feel generally positive about the game?
I do, and I say that with you know, watching the sort of warm up games that England played and the disappointment and the frustration with those as well. Yeah. I think that we've got to look at the Premiership first, because this is where all of our players are playing in the Premiership. How good was that competition last year? It was just such a cracking year on the field that the rugby product was just brilliant, and there's no disputing it. There were games that were on a knife edge. You'd come to Kings and you didn't know who's going to win. There was that jeopardy that creates excitement. And so there was all that excitement around the Premiership. But I don't think it quite translated, or hasn't yet translated, to the national game. And what we've got to be fair to is we've got to be fair to Steve Borthwick and give him some time. Because like any coach coming in, there's differences to what he's doing with their team versus what Eddie did. And so he's got to have time. I think he's hit it at a particularly difficult time because it's the World Cup and all eyes are on him, and it's relentless and it's week in, week out. But what I see is a team that's improving every week. You know, the games in the World Cup have gone okay. They're not knockout amazing. And are we playing a brand of rugby that we can be proud of as a nation? Probably not. Some bits of it are good, but we're getting there. I think we'll be proud if we get to the quarterfinal and get a semi-final and then push on. That will be great, and everyone would have probably forgotten about the start. So I think it's in good shape, my answer to that question. I think we can be excited about the future. The Premiership is the sort of the bedrock of it, and then if we can build from there, and if Steve can be given a bit more time with the team, then I think we've got a bright future.
Yep, agreed. I will be honest, just to pick you up on one small thing, Alex. If we could get every game at Gloucester to be 100% sure we're going to win, Gloucester are going to win. I don't really want to know. I don't really want to have to worry about what's going to happen. Just let us win every game. That's fine. Away games, we can make that exciting. That'd be good. But thank you again. Really do appreciate it. Unfortunately, the daft thing is none of us are going to be there on Friday night because we're going to be in France. So the next opportunity we'll have to get down to watch Gloucester will be Hartbury away, followed by the Barbars at home. And then we're nearly at the league season. So, but thank you very much. Really appreciate your time. Good luck for the rest of the season. I'm sure we'll say hello at some point. And all the best.
Cheers, Ed.